As I mentioned at the beginning of the meeting, I may flip-flop two items on the agenda. I'm going to do that. We will address the Interspecies Committee report first, and then we will roll into the groundfish item. So we're going to flip-flop those. As the chair of the Interspecies Committee, I'll give the report. If you look behind tab number 6, there are four documents. The first document is a long and thorough draft meeting summary of the Interspecies Committee. We had some, quite frankly, some issues of timing in finalizing this draft, and so it is a draft summary at this point. Just highlight to the council, this was a committee that I created. The composition of the committee was the chairs of all of our FMP committees, and in addition, members of the Northeast Regional Science Center, Fishery Science Center, the Northeast Regional Office, and the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission have a seat, and the Mid-Atlantic Council. The chair, Rick Robbins, was in attendance as well. My concept for establishing the committee centered around the new MSA requirements and the establishment of ACLs and AMs, and some of the complications that we're already starting to see as we move through plan by plan. I think one of the best examples is the relationship between the scallop plan and the groundfish plan, and setting an ACL in one plan and setting an AM in another plan. So that was one of the reasons that I put this committee together, to talk about those issues. Also to talk about allocation and talk about the precision that's going to be required of the management process in terms of accounting for catch as it relates to rebuilding plans, and also how accountability measures are going to function. The committee also explored the scope of fishery management units, and several times people raised the issue of combining what are now three separate plans, groundfish, monkfish, and skate, into an integrated bottom fish plan. But we did have some specific charges as well. One of them was to provide or finalize the comments for the council on priorities for the 2009 observer coverage under the SBRM. If you turn to page 3, there are three bullets about the middle of the page that summarize the discussion that precedes these bullets. And if you turn to document number 2, which is behind this document, that's the letter that was sent out on behalf of the council to the Science Center as it was prioritizing sea days. It's important to note that some of the considerations that the committee felt it needed to translate back to the council was that we're not so sure we have the expertise to recommend specific changes in terms of numbers of sea days. There was concern expressed by the committee as to the number of sea days that were at the time allocated to the large mesh groundfish fishery. And we made one recommendation that went something along the lines of, if you find yourself with extra days in different bins, reallocate them to small mesh fisheries. That was consistent with what the Mid-Atlantic Council had done as well. Last week at the NRCC meeting, we were given an update on the findings of the center, the Science Center, on the allocation, final allocation spread for days at sea, or sea days, from the Observer Program, and you will note that they took both ours and the Mid-Atlantic Council's recommendations to heart and did reallocate sea days into those fishing modes. The second issue we discussed was management plan integration. As I said, my thinking on that was that we should explore that concept of combining plans. Specifically, at the time, I was thinking that it would enable us to deal with ACLs and AMs more efficiently. It was also a concern from the Science Center as to their ability to do assessments on a frequent enough basis for the council to know where we are on our rebuilding timelines. So there was some discussion about that. Another benefit that one of the committee members brought up, if we were to integrate plans, was that it would be easier to have consistency in monitoring and in rules that apply to all those modes of fishing that are currently in three different plans. The Mid-Atlantic Council chair, who I said was at the committee, mentioned that they're doing an ACL and AM omnibus amendment to tackle all of these issues at once across the board, and essentially what they'll end up with is a, unless I have it wrong, Erling, a matrix of ACLs and AMs.
Well, I guess like a one size going to fit all the plans. I think that's what our goal is, to make it simpler.
Right. So you've chosen to tackle it all in one omnibus?
Yes.
Okay. So if you turn to page 8 at the top, after a lengthy discussion back and forth that meandered into many different veins of discussion, came up with two findings, that management plan integration might reduce the problems caused by differences in our fishery management plans. But it was also noted that it's difficult for the council to develop a vision for its fisheries in the future, but such a vision might make managing our fisheries easier. We seem to hear that every 18 months or so. We didn't get very far on that charge. Option number three, or issue number three, was a discussion of options to address yellowtail flounder incidental catch by scallop vessels as it affects the scallop access areas in New England. There's many, many pages of discussion here. That was probably one of the most talked about issues that we covered for the day. Deirdre was there, and she explained that 10% of the yellowtail flounder bycatch tack allocated to scallopers and controlled access areas has been exceeded in 2006 and 2008, and the open area compensation trips did not enable the boats to make up for that lost yield. As a result, the scallop industry was interested in acquiring an additional allocation of yellowtail flounder to avoid similar closures in the future. Additionally, the new ACL requirements will limit the amount of yellowtail flounder that scallopers can catch in the open areas. So those are the issues that are that have driven this discussion that we were asked to take a look at. I believe we have another document in here. That's something else. We had some documents available to the committee to review about past performance and about options that were available to address this issue in the near term and then again in the long term. The first thing we did was consider, can we take action in Amendment 16 to address this issue? I believe that we determined we could not, and that the earliest we could take action that action wouldn't be implemented until 2011. Another issue that was brought to our attention was the interaction of what's observed for yellowtail bycatch and how that extrapolation is performed and what impact that extrapolation has on the fleet as a whole. We were reminded that we have an outstanding request with the, I believe, the Science Center or the Observer Program and how they perform that extrapolation. And we're still waiting for that report before we move forward on considering whether or not an increase in observer coverage may refine those extrapolations. Paul Howard?
Just to that point, Mr. Chairman, Nancy sent an email this morning with the response, and I sent it off to Dee, and she's going to bring copies for the scallop discussion in case the council has any questions about it. But we do have it now. Got it this morning.
So maybe we'll have that available in June, June council meeting?
For scallops tomorrow, Thursday.
Oh, we'll have it on Thursday?
Yes.
Okay. Another suggestion was that the yellowtail allocation should be tailored annually to account for the area rotation system that we have currently in the scallop fishery. So would essentially, I think, if I have the concept correct, the allocation of yellowtail would go up or down depending upon whether or not the access area trips would be in areas where the yellowtail were. There was also discussion about the value of yellowtail to a scallop fisherman versus the value of yellowtail to a groundfish fisherman. And there were several mentions that the council should investigate using an optimization model, which I'm not very familiar with. I understand the concept, but I have asked the SSC chair if it's similar to a management strategy evaluation, and I believe the answer is yes, and I believe he'll be available to us later today if we want to ask him about the management strategy evaluations. We were also informed that closed area 2 most likely will not open in 2010. That's not definite, but that was an area where the catch rates were the highest and we would have problems. So unfortunately, we don't have a lot of recommendations on this issue either. As I pointed out, several suggestions were made, some for economic analysis. There were some suggestions that the scallop fleet maybe could have access to these areas at different times to lower the bycatch of yellowtail flounder. But we don't have any specific suggestions to increase observer coverage. As I said, we're waiting to see what the results of that report are. There's no sector opportunity in Amendment 16 for scallop boats, and the amendment has no provision for sectors to transfer ACE to individual vessels. Remember, the sector's allocation is an annual catch entitlement that goes to the sector itself, and there's no provision contemplated in Amendment 16 to allow a sector to transfer quota or lease quota to an individual vessel. So it was determined at this point that the best the council can do is acknowledge this problem and it's going to continue and at times grow. In the mid to long term, the council might be able to address the issue by changing gear requirements or through changes to sector or other measures to allow the transfer of yellowtail to scallop vessels. The next issue we were asked to discuss was measures to prevent increased effort in non-scallop fisheries such as fluke, squid, groundfish, and monkfish by scallop vessels that may lease their scallop allocations to other vessels as contemplated under Scallop Amendment 15. There is a document that is in this packet that was available to the committee that laid out the discussion. That's document number 3. We were asked to review a scallop motion from the January 22nd scallop committee meeting. It was motion number 7. It's on page 1 of document number 3. And we do have a motion that we took at our committee. It's on page 12 and 13, actually page 13. Our committee concluded unanimously concluded and passed the following motion to recommend to the scallop committee to move their motion number 7 that we reviewed to considered but rejected. And I believe the scallop committee took that issue up at its most recent meeting, and we'll get that on Thursday in the scallop committee report. The final issue that we tackled is on page 14 of this report, and it's a process for changing specifications for multiple species caught in fisheries managed under annual catch limits and different FMPs. So that's page 13. This was a discussion that relates to a concern I have that down the road, as we finally have ACLs and AMs in single species FMPs, that we're going to run into trouble making adjustments just simply because of the timing of the process. Some fishing years don't line up. Some catch date is not available until halfway through a fishing year. And this is an issue I know that the SSC has addressed. I think two or three meetings ago they looked into this as well. But it just continues to be an issue, at least for me, that I think we need to put more thought into and planning and how we position our spec process so that we can, say, deal with a yellowtail issue in a scallop fishery or any other species bycatch issue in a fishery. So possibly we can streamline the specifications process, and that's what we'll continue to look into. And then there was one other issue that we addressed. We were asked to look at it. The transfer of quota among general category scallop permit holders. And the committee decided by consensus to recommend that scallop committee include an option in Amendment 15 to allow the transfer of quota in the scallop general category fishery, much like the leasing program, but as a permanent transfer of IFQ. It was noted that this option does not raise issues or complications that a permit splitting consideration would. And under this option, a boat would not be required to transfer all of the scallop allocation associated with its permit. And again, I think the scallop committee may or may not have motions on Thursday that address that. So, future tasks for the committee. I think this committee is going to need to develop some terms of reference before it has another meeting. It was an enjoyable meeting for me because we didn't have a gun to our head. We didn't have a specific decision or two that we had to make on a timeline. And it gave council members, many of them came out after the meeting and said that they actually enjoyed having these discussions about where we're going and how the best way to get there might be and what problems we see on the horizon. It wasn't a results-orientated meeting per se, but it was a healthy discussion of the leadership of the council or the committees of the council, and it was an opportunity for the science side of things and the regional office side of things and our neighbors to the south to engage in a dialogue over some complex issues that we're all grappling with in different ways. So it was a bit of a learning experience as well. But my suggestion is that we're going to need to establish terms of reference so we can set a purpose for this committee. It's also important to note we don't have a PDT for this committee. We have no analytical power, per se. Some additional things that we may want to consider is a concept of permit splitting, vessel upgrades, permit transfers. Continue to think about integration of plans. Continue to think about a streamlined specifications process. And then perhaps standardization of monitoring and reporting across all plans. And then finally, the consideration of allocation and how we're allocating plan by plan and looking for consistency throughout the plans. So that's my report, and I'd be happy to entertain any questions or if anybody else on the committee wants to chime in. Dr. Pierce.
I'm not on the committee, Mr. Chairman. Do you want to take committee members first? Okay. I've got a question regarding an action that your committee took, specifically a motion that was made in the context of the scallop committee's concern about shift of effort from the scallop fishery to other fisheries. And I refer you to document number 3 that you've already referenced, where the scallop committee sent to the Interspecies Committee some logic regarding concern about days at sea leasing in the scallop fishery that led to the committee's concern, the scallop committee's concern that there could be increased effort in other fisheries as a result of leasing in the scallop fishery, et cetera, et cetera. And it's looking to the Interspecies Committee as to how to best address this issue. So it seems like you know, the groundwork was done, the concern was expressed, outlined by the Scarlet Committee, and then forwarded to your group. And then, indeed, you did take up that specific request. That's on page 12 of the summary of your meeting. And here I see a repeat of the motion that gets to my concern as well. And I think we've always, well, many of us have expressed concern about days at sea leasing and movement of effort into one fishery as a consequence of the leasing phenomenon. So here are the motions from the January 22nd Scarlet Committee meeting. A little bit of text accompanies that, but I really haven't been able to get a clear understanding as to why your committee recommended that the Scarlet Committee take that motion and move it to the considered but rejected alternatives. The discussion is brief. Would you, Mr. Chairman, or someone else who was very much involved in that discussion, care to elaborate and explain why the Scarlet Committee's concern has, I think, been set aside? I assume for some very good reasons, but still, the concern has been set aside about the consequences of days at sea leasing within the Scarlet fishery. So if you would elaborate, I would appreciate that.
Okay, thanks, Dave. I'd have to pull out my handwritten notes, which I think I can, if you want to give me a moment. But I think we did go through these five considerations or ways to deal with the leasing. And my recollection was that for some of them, it was thought that the alternative made it unlikely that leasing would occur based on the restrictions that would be placed on the program. And for others, on that first point, for instance, I better go back to my written notes. But I think the it came down to if an action in one plan is going to contribute to increased effort in another plan, it's that other plan's responsibility to address it. But I'll let other committee members speak to that point as I look for my handwritten notes on discussion. Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think on that last point, there, and I may be getting several different committee meetings mixed up, but I think we've had this discussion in several different committee meetings, and that is just to the point that John made. General Counsel has said to us that the measures in one FMP have to focus on things that would impact the species under management in that FMP rather than strictly species that are in another FMP. He's pointed out to us on a number of occasions that that has to be dealt with under the other FMP. If by not doing something you impacted, in this case, scallops, then you could do it. But other than that, you have to do it under the other FMP.
Sally?
And it wasn't just that there was a limitation on what could be done in one FMP versus another. It wasn't just the kind of regulatory boxes that were in by virtue of how the fisheries are managed, but there was discussion at the Scallop Committee that went to the Interspecies Committee and that was followed up again by the Scallop Committee last week after discussion in both committees that the potential for increased effort is not what might have been expected. So the initial reason for that complete range of alternatives that was in the proposed to be analyzed in Amendment 15 to the Scallop Plan, it was put there as a placeholder. I remember Mary Beth actually made that motion several months ago just so that we could make sure that we were examining the question of whether there would be potential for increased effort in other fisheries. And my recollection, and I look to other committee members from the Scallop Committee or Interspecies, is that it wasn't just that one FMP or another was the right place to take the action, because we really wanted to figure out if there was going to be increased effort as a result of something that happens in the scallop plan in other fisheries. So we didn't just stop there. We wanted to, you know, explore that question. Would there be increased effort? And there's, you know, significant representation from the Mid-Atlantic, which are the fisheries that are really of greatest interest as far as where that shift in effort might go. But we came to the conclusion that it wasn't something worth further exploring, and therefore both committees are recommending that it be considered but rejected.
Dr. Pearson.
Okay, all well and good. I guess that means that the Mid-Atlantic Council would have to take a very close look at whatever actions the Scallop Committee takes and this council takes on scallops to determine itself the extent to which effort will shift from the scallop fishery, if days at sea leasing is a component of the scallop plan, the extent to which effort will shift from scallops to fluke and squid and butterfish and scup and all the rest, which is a pretty big chore to dump on the Mid-Atlantic Council. I guess where I'm going with this is, will the Scallop Committee, out of this interspecies committee, was there any discussion about the Scallop Committee, the plan itself, having to do all the analyses relative to where the anticipated effort would go? Hence, the Mid-Atlantic Council would have that analysis in hand and be able to then in some way respond to that anticipated shift in effort by modifying its plan to get ready for that shift in effort. So where does the responsibility lie? Did the Interspecies Committee get to that issue?
Howard. Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I think we've had this discussion an awful lot, and you probably need a policy statement, but to me it appears that with the advent of ACLs and AMs, if we're worried about transfer of effort, we worry about overfishing, and ACLs and AMs will prevent that excess effort from causing undue harm. But if we're worried about fairness, which is another thing we should be worried about, then it's up to the Mid-Atlantic Council to develop fair methods of allocating the fish and setting a timeline on a baseline, or what are we, qualification periods and assigning allocation. So if it's a matter that we're concerned about the transfer of effort that will cause overfishing because it's excess capacity, then we should let them know we're concerned about it, but that you're going to develop ACLs to prevent that overfishing, and if you're concerned about closing fisheries early and fairness among the traditional participants, then you can set an allocation scheme. But it seems unreasonable to say that the Scallop Committee is going to worry about all that transfer of effort and do all that analysis when we've got pretty blunt instruments that can take care of it that are the responsibility of the other council.
Early.
Well, is there some concern then that there will be a shift of effort away from the scallops into the traditional fisheries in the Mid-Atlantic, the squid and all this? Is that what the concern is?
Is that your concern, Dr. Pierce?
Well, that was the concern of the Scallop Committee when they asked the Interspecies Committee to address this particular issue. I'm just trying to look ahead to see who's going to have the responsibility of doing this particular work. And once again, it would seem to me that the Scallop Committee, if the Scallop Committee is going to do something, is going to allow something, and this council agrees, and the service approves it, all right, we're going to do something. We're going to set wheels in motion, that is, promote the shifting of effort into other fisheries, then it should be this council's responsibility to advise the Mid-Atlantic Council as to what they should expect. Some analysis has to be done by someone in order to deal with this thorny issue. And again, it's not new. We certainly have dealt with this issue with our sector policy, right? Years ago, we developed a sector policy, and an element of that policy was we need to be very careful about sectors and the unintended shift of effort from one fishery to another. I'm still wrestling with this. I have no answers to this. Obviously, it's a huge task, and extremely difficult to analyze, whether it's us or whether it's them. But before I act on, vote on Scallop Leasing, Days at Sea Leasing, I'd like to know what the impact is going to be on Fluke and Scup and Seabass and the rest, because Massachusetts, through ASMFC, is involved in managing those three species. I have to respond to what the Mid-Atlantic Council does in concert with ASMFC, so I'm not too keen on doing something for the scallop fishery, Days at Sea Leasing, for example, if that Days at Sea Leasing is going to make my job a lot worse as a manager having to handle Mid-Atlantic Southern New England species that this New England Council has no authority on.
Rodney?
There you go.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I could see every scallop would run out for the 500 pounds Massachusetts allows us to catch. But we went over this. Deidre showed us a chart, and the effort, there wasn't that effort shift in that chart. The people who qualified for these permits already do that. All these other fisheries are managed by states, and some of these scallopers that have these other permits are incidental permits, so they really are not going to impact that other fishery, like the squid. Everybody's got an incidental squid permit.
Where's the analysis?
The analysis is common sense. You know where the boat's. No. I'm sorry. I'm a fisherman. I know it.
Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think what Dr. Pierce is looking for, the Scallop PDT, did do the analysis, so it perhaps it's available under the scallop tab. If not, I think we could ask the staff to bring it forward. The only thing you can really do is look at the existing scallop vessels, limited access fleet. You know, what do they have for permits? What combination of permits do they have? And what was their activity in the past? So all that information was prepared for the scallop meeting when we had the discussion last week. And it certainly didn't seem to indicate that there was, from what you can tell, that would necessarily be a large increase in other fisheries. But we're only looking back. I mean, looking forward is a different thing. But
Dr. Pierce.
Okay, so the Interspecies Committee did have access to that Scarlet Plan Development Team document. You did look at it, and it did influence your decisions. And as a consequence of that, you went with this particular motion. What I'm saying is I get nothing. I'm not a member of the committee, right? So I have to depend upon what comes to me through these documents. And I'm asking questions, and now you're answering them. Thank you very much. And now it's helpful. I finally got to a particular endpoint, which is take a look at the Scarlet Plan Development Team analyses that addresses this issue of potential effort transfer. And I'm being told that it isn't a problem. So the committee looked at that PDT report, I assume, and then drew that. I just want to see how the committee got to the motion, that's all. It's an important motion. It relates to the scallop committee and what it wanted your committee to do. Well, whatever.
Sally?
Yeah, two things. So one thing that I think has been helpful for the scallop committee and as this interspecies committee gets up and running, I think will be helpful as well, is having the chair of the Mid-Atlantic Council there in addition to other Mid-Atlantic representatives to be able to make sure that they're seeing the analysis that's being done to understand what, if any, shift in effort and increased effort in fisheries either within or beyond the jurisdiction of the New England Council might be. So that's been hugely helpful in the context of the scallop committee's work, and I think it will be for the interspecies committee as well. The other thing is, and I just look for some guidance to you, Mr. Chairman, on what potentially the terms of reference might be for the interspecies committee, because I think this discussion that we've had so far has kind of pointed to the kinds of issues that are broad and incredibly hard to deal with on a species-by-species basis. We didn't talk about the question of monitoring, but we keep reinventing the wheel across different fisheries. That seems like something that's would be important and relevant for the Interspecies Committee to deal with. And, you know, ultimately talking about allocation and how that happens and what the implications for allocation are, not just for one fishery, but for multiple fisheries where an individual might engage in more than one fishery. So allocation in one has, as we're discussing now, implications for others. So those are, you know, those are two huge issues that keep coming up over and over again. We keep reinventing the wheel that I would suggest are appropriate for the Interspecies Committee to really dig into deep and come up with some not just concrete recommendations, but actions for the council to take on at least those two really important issues.
Erling.
Well, so far, I mean, the shift in effort has been away from squid and into scallops. So many vessels in our area that primarily or exclusively fish squid and some mackerel that are now scallopers. And if my memory serves me correct, to get into the scallop fishery, that's a permit. You need a permit for it. So I really don't see where a vessel without a permit is going to be able to pursue that fishery.
Okay. Anything else? Chris?
In answer to Dave's concern, I just wanted to say that as part of every amendment that's going to cause an effort shift or potentially cause an effort shift, we include a fishery impact statement. Now, I think you have to realistically keep in mind what can be put in that fishery impact statement, which is a lot of educated guesses, and we are by no means put in prescriptions for, let's say, the fishery for the Mid-Atlantic in terms of what options they should consider. But the discussion in at the Interspecies Committee was a general discussion to characterize it that relied on people's expertise and experience rather than any particular PDT or staff analysis. So, Dave, I think that more formal analysis is still forthcoming and is under development, but you will see that as part of any draft environmental impact statement that will go forward with the scallop amendment.
Jimmy?
Yeah, an issue that's been kind of rolling around in my head that I thought the interspecies, and it looked like you had a little bit of conversation here, was the idea that the Mid-Atlantic is using to have a matrix on how to do their ACTs, AMs, and ALs. I know I'm on two or three different committees here, and quite frankly, every single one of them now is trying to have a different matrix. We've got ACTs and ALs in one, and we've got none in the other, and we've got buffers going above the ABC and one, and I think maybe an idea would be to try to come up with a matrix that we can take across all boards, all fisheries management plans, and maybe this committee could help us get out of the weeds and this other stuff. You know, in every single committee, we're really struggling.
Yeah, we did talk about that, Jim. If you look at page 13. Under number 5, the third paragraph, that was something I kicked out there with the committee. I think it's something we'll continue to think about. Go ahead, Jim.
I mean, is it possible to bring the plan development teams or the people of each committee to try to bring them together and try to hash out a matrix that would work, or through this committee, or can you pursue that? I guess I'm making a request of the chair to try to think about a way to get this Interspecies Committee to deal with that issue.
Okay, thank you. Paul?
I think that the Mid-Atlantic Council has, I think they have all hard tacks, all similar measures. So it's very easy for them to do a omnibus bill on AC, on omnibus amendment for ACLs and AMs. I think our experience is every committee has their own unique way of doing things, and their ACLs and AMs are going to be different because we're going from input controls to maybe output controls, maybe not, certainly not in some stocks and in some in others. And so I think that when we talked about this last at executive committee, that it was felt that although it would be nice to have some consistency, our amendments aren't just about ACLs and AMs. There's a lot into it, and every committee has a different idea about whether they're going to implement hard controls for AMs or just trip limits or reduced days or whatever.
Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I could, I just wanted to ask Jim a couple of questions because I think we may be talking about two different things here. I think that Jim was talking about a standardization of terms that we're using, OFLs, ABCs, ACLs, ACTs, and whether we are or are not going to use those in individual fisheries. And then I think some other people are talking about the matrix of setting up something to show maybe more the actual numbers and all of the sub-ACLs.
Well, I'm not looking at – my thought is not looking at numbers, Rip, is looking at a matrix that we can use the acronyms. But, for instance, I thought on this council level we had a discussion a while back that we weren't going to use ACTs. Well, I could have got lost in that, and maybe it was at a committee, but I thought it was of the full council. And some of them we are using them, and the others we're not. Now, I think we need to, as a council, decide how we want to come up with a matrix, if we want to come up with a matrix and using the same acronyms for each species. Not put numbers to it, but just how you're going to get to where you need to get to. So I'm not trying to be vague. I just think that we're doing a lot of work outside here that I think if we could standardize it somewhat, maybe each we're not talking about numbers. We're talking about a way to get to numbers, and each fisheries management plan will come to different numbers, but we still should be able to find a matrix that helps us get to those numbers. Thank you.
You're talking about consistent use of terminology and a process as to how we arrive at those numbers. Okay. Dr. Pierce.
Well, I agree with Jim, except that to me it's not an issue of using consistent terminology. It's a question of not using a concept at all. It becomes very confusing to me when I flip-flop between different committees here, listening to a committee report, or being part of committee discussion, making motions, voting on motions, when we consistently see such things as ACT show up, the ACT, the annual catch target. Now, I and my agency took a very strong position on the National Standard Number 1 guidelines on the ACT. We were strongly opposed to that concept. We didn't think it was necessary. It wasn't required by the Act. And then, back in September of last year, this council took a position as well, of sorts. Very very well put together set of comments was submitted to Mark Milliken, the National Marine Fisheries Service, describing all of our concerns. There was a table in reference to ACT with an expression of serious concerns, very serious concerns, as it says, about the mandated addition of an annual catch target. So we said that. Okay. That was our position. It supported my position. Therefore, I like the council position. Now, of course, the service, when publishing the final National Standard Number 1 guidelines, says ACT is an option. Okay. Fine enough. But we keep seeing the term ACT and the concept ACT surface through plan development teams, through staff documents, and now I don't know who's driving the bus or steering the ship. I want ACT to be put aside. I don't want to use it. I want to focus on something consistent with the National Standard Number 1 guidelines, of course, the ACLs, the AMs, but not the ACT. It just confuses me to no end, and it must be confusing the industry and others who are trying to follow us. You know, layers of uncertainty, layers of precaution added on. Again, I understand all of that, but I support Jimmy's views. We need to have a consistent approach. We need to have some internal dynamics squared away with the staff, my suggestion, because I suspect that the staff is, they talk to each other, obviously, because they're a cohesive bunch and they do great work. But I fear that maybe one staff member is working off of a plan development team strategy that relates to ACT, and why not? Because they chair that particular plan development team. It then goes to the committee. Another plan development team may have another idea of dealing with ACT, maybe not consider it at all. So it becomes a very confusing mixture of concepts, and I want it simplified, and that's why I hope the Interspecies Committee could address this issue and get us on common ground, you know, get us on one plane, and not have us wonder whether a particular plan development team or staff member is giving us advice without having talked to other staff members, the executive director. You see where I'm coming from? I want this resolved. Otherwise, I'm going to find myself consistently opposing plans, elements of plans that have ACT. And the full council may want the ACT. But why? We've already said we have very serious concerns about it. Very serious concerns. We don't want it. We don't feel it's necessary. But it keeps raising its ugly head.
Chris Kellogg.
Yeah, I just want to review a little history about how we got to where we are. The preliminary guidelines were published about a year ago, I think in last January. In the meantime, we had to develop approaches for skates and groundfish. The council and the staff originally produced some draft comments saying that they didn't understand why they needed another layer of complication by adding an ACT. And the council submitted comments in September, largely based on the SSC, who said, and the SSC comment was that an ACT is not absolutely necessary, depending on how you handle the ACL. However, it should be left optional. And indeed, the service left it optional in their final guidance. In the meantime, I think what some people on the staff and actually in the industry and on committees perceived is that there was some possibly extra flexibility available by using an ACT, because if you seemed to fit naturally into what we were already doing with herring, for example. And if we managed on an ACT and the ACT was properly set, you would not be exceeding your ABC. However, if you exceeded the ACT, you wouldn't trigger the AMs. And I think, Dave, the key is which plans do you want to avoid triggering AMs for? Now, groundfish, we got too far down the road, I think, to then go change based on the final guidelines. But we could see which way the guidelines were going in late November and December. And, you know, personally, I perceive some benefits out of possibly using an ACT to give the council some more flexibility. And among the staff, there was a debate, just like that you would find among the councils or different council staffs. And there have been some councils, I think it's the South Atlantic uses some different approaches and different plans. So I'm not sure. I think the Interspecies Committee could focus on this and discuss it, but I wouldn't prejudice that by saying that you don't want a particular provision in a particular plan at this point. We can't go backwards in time and change some of the things that we've already locked in because we were facing timelines. One other difference between the situation that this council's in the Mid-Atlantic is we perhaps had more overfished stocks or stocks in which overfishing was going on. So we had a tighter timeline perhaps on some of these stocks to get these things in by 2010 rather than waiting until 2011.
Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with a lot of what has been said, and originally my comments were going to be mostly to what Chris just went through, or how we got here. But I do think we need to take a step back from how we got here. We know we had time frames and these things had to be developed and proposed rule was out. But Herring, as an example, we just took the terminology ACT out of the plan recommended by the committee at this point. We certainly wouldn't want to change the plan, which includes, you know, what some people could call an ACT, but we're going to choose not to, and that is to close the fishery at 95%. So you have a buffer. Hopefully, the plan there is to not exceed the ACL, and that's what we've had in Herring since 2000. So I think conceptually there will be a similar process in scallops, but again, you know, we might want to consider just changing that terminology. What are we going to use for terms? What are we going to be consistent with across plans? I think we do need to step back a little bit. I'm a little concerned when people say we've gone too far down the road in groundfish. I haven't actually reviewed that portion of the document, I guess, as well as I should, and we'll have to think about that. But I would hope we're not too far down the road.
Terry.
Speaking of too far down the road, tomorrow we're going to talk about monkfish. And I think this is what Jim's referring is to the committee's discussion last week when the PDT proposed ACTs as a flexibility measure to help with the ACLs and the proactive and the reactive accountability measures. We're on a pretty short timetable to get our work done, to bring the council back some alternatives for the June meeting. So I hope tomorrow morning we only have an hour to discuss that we can go through this and get some concurrence from the councils how we can move forward, because if we don't address our ACLs and AMs, there's not much else we can include in this amendment.
Okay. Anything further on this issue? Dr. Pierce?
Yeah, well, in order to obviously Chris has made a number of good points, and it would be helpful if the remarks that he made can be conveyed to us in such a way that we understand the thinking now of the staff relative to the usefulness of ACT, because if the staff has agreed that it is now something that we should actually embrace to use because it gives us added flexibility, as Chris said, then I'd like to see that in writing so I can better understand it, and that would help convince me, I suppose, that I should change my thinking about the ACT. Because if the staff fully supports the concept of ACT, then I'll likely support it as well. But I need to better understand that mind shift that I think has happened since 2008 September.
John, I think I need to clarify something. The staff doesn't have a position on necessarily supporting the ACTs. I think the committees and some members of the industry have suggested also using ACTs. A lot depends on what types of ACTs you have. Are they sufficiently proactive so that you're not going to exceed your ACL? I think there's a concern that I think everybody in this region has that the catch limits not be exceeded. So it depends on how the ACT is set and what the history of the fishery is. You know, Herring has a pretty, I think, a pretty good track record of not being over its TAC. I'm not absolutely positive of how we've matched up with TACs, whether we've gone over by a few percentage points in the past, and an adjustment would have to be made for that. But that's a fishery which seems to fit into, at least to the staff when we looked at it, and there was preliminary discussions with NIMS, seem to fit into the model of using an ACT, provided that there were proactive measures taken.
It seems like people are discussing the idea that groundfish has ACTs in the plan. Not to my knowledge. No. I know scallops has it under consideration, and I guess skates and monkfish. Right. I understand the desire to have a consistent approach to performing this exercise plan by plan. And I take take Dr. Pierce's concerns and comments seriously, and I think we do need to look into what is the reasoning behind having different approaches and different plans. I know that the SSC committee, the SSC has reviewed, Scallop and Monkfish preliminarily and talked about the value of having an ACT or an ACTA. Is that what it is? Yeah, an ACT. Wow. I think we do need to find a way to justify that additional layer, if you will, plan by plan. Dr. Pierce, is that something you're asking for, or would that satisfy you? Why in this plan are we doing it and not in this plan? Okay. Paul Howard?
We can bring back in at the June council meeting the 7 plans that we manage and whether, you know, we're moving towards ABC and ACL or ABC, ACL, and ACT. We can,
sure.
And rationale why the committees or whatever are moving in that direction. We can have that on the agenda in June.
Anything further? Jim Fair.
Just that if a committee wants to set a buffer below ACL and even use that as an AM, they have to call it something. And it is an ACT. I mean, we could call it something else if it bothers people, but depends on what the committee feels they need for a buffer below ACL.
Okay, we're already a couple minutes over. Anything further from the council? Okay, just to kind of give you a understanding of where we're going to go from here. I brought up before the need to develop terms of reference. I've gotten some direction from some of the comments today, and I'm just going to work with staff and members of the committee to try to kick around a set of terms of reference to come back to you guys in June to review. So I don't anticipate having an interspecies meeting between now and then, unless there's objection. Oh, okay, so that's what we're going to do. Paul Howard.
One other alternative, Mr. Chairman, might be that there are several different issues that you've talked about, is to come back with the council in June with the top three issues to, you know, the top three areas to address and say, you know, we recommend we handle this one first, this one second, this one third, and that, you know, there's terms of reference how we'd handle number one, how we'd handle number two and number three. So that the council approves on a priority of issues and then the terms of reference for each issue.
Terms of reference and a prioritization. Okay. Jeff?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be brief. I know you're really busy, but normally I don't respond when my comments are not quite right, and I'm always appalled when I read verbatim transcripts of what I say at the microphone. But on page 2, I made comments to the Interspecies Committee, and I agree with the chairman. It was an interesting day because nobody's ox was going to get gored that day, and it was kind of fun to have those discussions. I talked about an appropriations request that we've made to Congress to do some herring monitoring and research, and I'm going to make that available for the Herring Committee tomorrow. But the last sentence here confuses, I think, what I said. What I was trying to say, what I tried to say is that the amount of observer coverage that we are requesting meets the CV, okay? And I think that's what the NRCC came up with. So those days are taken care of, the 433 days. What I was trying to get at in the second part of the sentence was not about monitoring. I was trying to make the distinction again, like I did this morning, about offshore surveys and inshore surveys. So if I could work with somebody to clean that last sentence up, it really doesn't say what I said. So I just wanted to point that out, and I'm appreciate you allowing me to take time to do that. Okay.
Yeah, if you could just, it's a draft document.
So yeah.
If you could just talk with Chris.
Okay.
Set him straight.
I'll do that. I'll get him straight. Thank you.
Okay, I think that's it under interspecies for now. Moving on to the next agenda item, ground fish mix.